Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Good morning. Okay, joining us now, the latest of a seemingly never-ending congressional interview. So many candidates running in the district for race. Dan Hamilton joins us. Good morning, Dan Hamilton.
Hey, Tara. Good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm going to dive right in, if you don't mind.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I want to start with this really quickly, and I have to compliment you. Your current political commercial that's on right now, the one about your mom, probably one of the best political commercials I've ever seen. Probably top 10. That is a great story. Could you tell us just a little bit about it? You ended up orphaned at 9 months old.
Yes, Tara. I was born in Miami, Florida in 1976, and of course that was after Roe v. Wade. My birth mother was a single lady and became a Christian while she was pregnant with me, and also was diagnosed with an in utero type of cancer. And the doctors told her that she could, you know, save her life by having treatments and potentially, you know, destroying the life of the child of me in her womb. But she made the decision to forego treatments and to have me. And what happened after I was born, her sickness got progressively worse, and she ended up dying actually on Mother's Day of 1977. And during that time after I was born, she made it her life's mission, the time that she had left, to find a Christian family for me to grow up in. And she had some very specific rules of the family. She wanted a house that there was no smoking or drinking, and that I would have a Christian education. And so I was adopted by the Hamilton family in 1977. My aunt, down in Miami, they were moving up to South Carolina. We moved here in the early 1980s. So I grew up in Greenville, but had a very interesting start to life. And my parents that raised me always told me that, you know, you're here for a reason. God preserved you. God gave you to us. And so it's always been a, I've always kind of been on a sense of mission, of greater purpose in my life that my parents have instilled in me.
Talking to Dan Hamilton, who is running in the district for race. And of course, you've tied this to, you know, to being pro-life and, you know, to you and I have talked thus far about Planned Parenthood. And I asked you a couple weeks ago, and I've asked this of a couple of other candidates in the race as well, Dan, that, you know, hey, you know, but you guys have a history of voting for state budgets that, you know, fund Planned Parenthood, even if it's, you know, indirectly. And y'all had to have known about that because you've had other people, you know, like Kevin Bryant, who have protested that fact that there's funding in there, you know, going back several years. I mean, that's gotten news coverage. And one of the things that you, and this is what I got to ask you, one of the things you told me was that you, you know, were, I think, co-sponsoring something that would end the funding of Planned Parenthood. And I wanted to ask you, because it was, you know, as an amendment, that you did not make the House vote on that amendment. You weren't there to vote. You had an excused absence. How come you had an excused absence?
Sure. So I did. In fact, I think I talked to you that day. So we went down to Columbia, went down there, and I worked with John McGravy, who's from Greenwood, chairman of the Family Caucus. And he and I co-sponsored an amendment that would strip that $13,000 out of Planned Parenthood, which, again, I did not knowingly, you know, we didn't know that. And John didn't know that. None of it. 116 of us voted to send that budget to the Senate. When we found out about it, John and I worked together on that amendment. We were down there for all day, and that vote came up, I think it was 8 or 9 p.m., and I had a flight scheduled to go up for a meeting, for an early morning meeting the next day. And so I missed it, had to leave at 7 p.m. I missed the vote, but I worked all day long to make sure that when that vote came up, it was going to pass. And it passed by like 40 votes. So, you know, this idea that, you know, just you didn't make the vote, it doesn't hold up. I mean, I was the, if you look on the sponsor, you know, on that amendment, it's McGravy and Hamilton. It's two of us. And we worked to get that done and passed by 40 votes. So very pleased that we were able to strip that down.
And I don't mean to question you, Dan, but I mean, 6 months ago, the governor sent a letter to our State Department of Health and Human Services requesting a waiver to defund Planned Parenthood so we didn't have to fund them in the budget. As you've said, the words Planned Parenthood don't appear in the budget. I get that. It's a pass-through funding. But, I mean, the governor knew it was there 6 months ago. There was news coverage of the governor doing that. Kevin Bryant, he's running for governor right now for 2 years, has been on this issue. He's been on our air. How did you miss the Planned Parenthood funding in the budget if the governor knew about it and if all these other people knew about it and were fighting it? When you voted for the budget with the Planned Parenthood funding in it.
I guess all 116 of us missed that as well. And I never, the governor never had any conversations with us about that. We had a 3-day budget process down in Columbia. That conversation did not happen during the budget process. And that is an executive branch decision. We fund the executive branch, and the executive branch went out and created those contracts. Again, it's almost like saying, I pay an employee, what that employee goes out and does with that money is, I can agree with it or not. But in this case, we're the employer as a state, and we're going to say, look, we're not going to do that anymore. It, at the end of the day, a dollar to Planned Parenthood is a problem in my mind. It was $13,000. The governor did have an executive order. Longstanding, and I don't know that it has anything to do with Planned Parenthood, but longstanding, there's an executive order that we do not fund abortions in this state, and that money, the $13,000 from the state, was not for abortion; it was for family planning services, and still, we don't need to fund Planned Parenthood, and we're not going to.
And the only reason I ask is because, Dan, I mean, and this is why I do tough interviews, because, I mean, voters are sick and tired of people saying one thing in the primary, but then going to Congress and, man, you're voting to fund Planned Parenthood and you're voting for all this crazy stuff that you said you wouldn't. And that's why I ask these questions. Speaking of voting, I went through and calculated this myself. OK, so you tell me if I'm wrong here. I'm looking at your votes for the last session. Roll call votes, you missed a third of those. 33%. All votes you missed 34% of. Have I miscalculated that? I took it right off your legislative site. And will you commit to making all your votes in Congress if you're elected? I know you run a very successful business. I get what you were probably doing. You were probably running that business. But a third of votes missed. Is that good constituent service?
Yeah. Tara, that's a great question. And there's two points to that. If you look over my entire career at the State House, according to the clerk's office, I have a 91% attendance record. So I'm there, engaged, actively making things happen. This particular session, there are 2 days that I missed that each day was about 180 votes. If you look at how many roll call votes we have in the State House, I think this year there's like 1,400. I mean, just an incredible amount. Some of those are votes like, we're going to change the district lines in Kershaw County, or we're going to, change the striped bass number from, you can catch 12 a day to 10. So we have a lot of on the record votes. I did miss, I think out of this entire session, I missed 5 days, and two of those were days where we had literally 180 votes. And so and those weren't even for work. Those were, personal situations that came up. I make it a priority to represent my constituents very well. If you talk to folks down in Columbia, they will tell you that Dan's a guy that is there. He's making things happen. He's a workhorse. The Club for Growth has called me one of the top taxpayer heroes in Columbia. So we get the job done. And I missed a day or two, but the difference in going to Washington is when you go to Washington, it's a full time job. And so I would be out of the real estate business. Going to Washington and not have to worry about that.
According to this, you missed, of the 1,322 votes in the last session, you missed 439. But I'm looking at these. A lot of the votes you missed were actually having to do with the budget. So, I would think those would be
exactly.
Pretty important. So, I mean, you missed a third of the votes, but a lot of those were budget votes. Helping to shape that budget.
Exactly. So two of those days I talked about, one was the very first day of the budget, which is the first reading. So that in a, and you have a series of on every single part of the budget, you have a roll call vote, and there's, you know, literally hundreds of parts of the budget. I missed that one day again. So I missed one day. So I missed 200 votes. But I had time to come back. I was there the next day, in which we really, the second reading is where you really get into the meat and the debate of the different parts of the budget. And then the other one were budget vetoes that I missed, which again was another day where the House is in session on a Monday, which we typically are not. And part of my role, my company is a leadership role, and we have out of town meetings that we're required to be at. And it was a day in that we're typically not even in Columbia on Mondays, and I missed, I think, 180 budget veto votes.
Speaking to Dan Hamilton, he is the running in the District 4 race for Congress to replace Trey Gowdy. I have to ask you this question. Our local chambers of commerce have given you their highest rating. You are the number one candidate on their list. They have been openly hostile to conservatives. And their surrounding fundraising appendages have worked in the state to take them out in elections. Yet you have their highest rating. Why? Why do they support you, do you think, if you are a conservative?
Well,
they rated you as excellent. You're at the top of their list.
Yeah,
of all the candidates in this race.
Right, yeah. I think Stephen Brown and I both received top scores for the Republicans from the chamber. And I think it's interesting to note, I'm a businessman. So I started a business from scratch, from nothing, at 26 years old. I've grown it over the years. My business is a member of the local Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm there helping create jobs, helping with the economy here. And when you look at the way that the chamber did that, they did a questionnaire. So we sent a questionnaire back to them, and then they had an interview. So you actually sat down in a room with, I don't know, there's probably 10 or 12 folks there from the Greenville, the Greer, and the Spartanburg Chamber. And these are business people that are here in the community. And they just asked all the candidates, you know, about, you know, what we've done, what we plan to do. And really it was more about, you know, how are you going to handle it? You didn't have to agree with them on issues. In fact, the chamber's number one priority last year in the state house was the gas tax. I voted against the gas tax. I told them from the beginning, I'm not going to vote for it.
But you voted for it the year before that, though, didn't you?
No. I've never voted
You've
for the
never
gas
voted
tax,
for the
never.
Gas tax? Okay.
No. So I told them point blank, you know, that's not where, you know, I'm going to be. But they did rate me the highest. And I think because of their two major issues that they want to see happen in Congress, and it is the repeal of Obamacare, which is killing jobs, killing businesses here in the upstate, and making sure that our workforce, so we're educating our next generation for the jobs that are out there, because that's the two things that they seem to be most focused on. And, you know, again, I voted against them on raising taxes, but they said that, look, Dan's a guy that's actually got a plan on some of these things, and he's got the ability to get them done.
At the same time, though, and we're talking to Dan Hamilton, who's candidate in the District 4 race, I have a copy of the questionnaire that you were sent. Mm-hmm. And this flat out asks, you know, it encourages, even right in the questions, it flat out tells you they want a DACA amnesty, and they want somebody who will fight the Trump trade agenda. And so I just find it curious that you know, were highly rated on that. Would you commit to releasing your answers to those questions that you gave the chamber to me? I've challenged candidates, all of them in this race, to do that. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten several responses from the candidates. Would you commit to releasing your, because I asked the chamber for everybody's answers. They won't give them to me. So would you give us the answers you gave the chamber?
We mailed it back to them, so I don't know that we have it. But I will tell you, my answers on those. On DACA, we don't, there is no solution there. Though DACA was an illegal act by President Obama, and there's no fixing that until we address chain migration and border security. So that has got to be the entire conversation. I told the chamber that. And again, they were not asking the candidates to agree with them on issues. They were asking, and I think 40% of their scoring came from the questionnaire, and the majority of it, 60%, came from the interview and how you handle yourself, how you approach issues. Can you explain kind of where you're coming from? And so you don't have to agree with them on things to get their ratings there, apparently.
So you don't feel like, even though they gave you their top endorsement, that you don't feel like they'll think you kind of owe them when it comes to voting on DACA and that kind of thing? I mean, because the DACA proposal before Congress right now legalizes 2 million with chain migration. There's tremendous pressure being put on Republicans by the National Chamber of Commerce to vote for that. And I mean, if you I mean you saw this race, Dan. I mean, President Trump lost the popular vote. I mean, we add 2 million more voters. It's lights out for the country. I mean, I hate it that it's come to that, but it is. I mean, we're done. We're a one party system. I mean, so will you commit to voting against DACA then on the record?
Yeah, I'm not going to add 2 million more illegal immigrants to the rolls. And if you don't think they put a lot of pressure on me to vote for that gas tax increase, you know, you got another thing coming. They put a ton of pressure on me of that. And I just I don't cater to pressure from friends or from enemies. It just doesn't matter. And I'm going to vote the way I'm going to vote with or without their support.
They also want you in these questions, the Chamber of Commerce here, the local one, to Dan, to take on the Trump trade agenda. Do you plan to take on the Trump trade agenda? Do you agree with the Trump trade agenda? If you do, you not? What did you tell him on that?
So I do disagree with President Trump's view on tariffs. I think tariffs have historically shown to not work. They are costs that are passed directly onto consumers. And I'll give you a very, very prime example. I was at a concrete pipe plant the other day, right in the middle of Greenville, in my state house district. And he said, look, you know, these concrete pipes have metal mesh inside them. And that mesh has gone up 40% in pricing because of the talk of tariffs. And this guy buys his, they're not even imported, but just because of the talk of tariffs, the price has increased on his goods. And that's being passed along to the consumers that buy there. So I disagree with President specifically on tariffs. I don't think they're good. At the end of the day, I believe that he's just using them as a negotiation tactic. So I understand where he's coming from. I'm a real estate guy. The president's a real estate guy. I understand negotiation, and I believe he's using that as a tool to get China to the table. Because, you know, there's a lot of talk about Russia, but China is 7 times larger than Russia and their economy, and they are eating our lunch. And if we don't do something about trade with China, we're in trouble. But I think tariffs are not the answer. You know, South Carolina economy is very much based on a free trade, export, import. A lot of the jobs here, GE, Michelin, BMW, we depend on foreign trade for the jobs that are right here in the upstate of South Carolina. So I'm going to fight to the death to defend those.
Do you, Dan Hamilton, support ending NAFTA? That's a big part of the Trump trade agenda as well.
NAFTA?
Ending NAFTA, renegotiating it, closing our borders to foreign goods.
We need to renegotiate NAFTA, absolutely.
Okay. I want to ask you about some of your supporters. The National Association of Realtors has bought a staggering $166,000 worth of advertising for you in this market. A lot of it will begin hitting May 30th. And most of the candidates that they have supported in the past were Democrats running against Republicans. The only Republicans that the National Association of Realtors have supported recently were Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham against their conservative challengers. Why? I mean, I know you're a realtor, so I mean, I get that. But why are they so for you? I mean, they don't have a history of supporting any conservatives at all.
Well, I would imagine if you ran for office that the National Association of Broadcasters would come out and help you, Tara, because you're a member. I would assume you're a member of that organization. I'm a realtor. Yeah, I mean, I started a real estate business at 25 years old. I've grown the business over 15 years. I pay dues to the National Association of Realtors. So their number one priority is to help, especially, you know, their members get elected. And they have some, you know, their agenda is, you know, number one, we've got to reform flood insurance. Flood insurance is a huge mess. If you look at what happened in Houston, you know, the government had to bail out the NFIP, the National Flood Insurance Program. So I've got some ideas that I've seen in real world life here, being a real estate guy, I can take to Washington and actually streamline and get more consumer choice in the flood insurance. It's a 100% government program right now. And then what the realtors want to do, what I want to do is make that more of a consumer choice and spread the risk around and not have the government bail out flood insurance. So I've never looked at who they support, but they're supporting me because I'm a member, absolutely. And I believe that's their only reason.
And it doesn't concern you that the only other Republicans they have supported lately are Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham beside yourself, or that they have been openly hostile to Trump, called him unfit for office, and said they'd love to see Trump resign in 2017, and that they are supporting you? I mean, you just seem like maybe not to really fit in with this list of people that they have supported. Again, most of whom are Democrats.
Yeah, I don't, Tara, I have no idea. I haven't really tracked who they support. I know if you talk to the real estate folks here in town, mm-hmm. they're the ones that would ask them to support me. And it's pretty interesting. It's real estate people from all different companies, you know. So there's thousands of real estate people here in Greenville, and they've asked them to help because they know me, they trust me. I've got a track record down in Columbia. I've got a track record as a business person, and that's why they're supporting me, because they know me.
Talking to Dan Hamilton, he is running in the District 4 race for Congress. Hey, I want to ask you this question. Texas right now, the state of Texas, has a economic growth rate of roughly 6%. South Carolina's is only slightly above California's at a little over 2%. The big difference, what makes Texas one of the fastest growing economies in the nation, is drilling. And that's according to federal statistics. So we could, you know, it could really be a game changer for us if we went after the oil and natural gas off our coast, estimated by two surveys to be, we've got more of it off that coast there in North Carolina than the rest of the East Coast combined. But we would have to explore first, not drill, but explore. Several Congress members have openly opposed and worked against in Congress President Trump's plan to explore off our coast and figure out if, you know, oil drilling and natural gas extraction can coexist with our tourism industry as it does in the Gulf of Texas and in California. Would you be one of those Congress members fighting that, or do you support exploration off our coast?
Sarah, that's a great question, and I 100% support exploration. There is no reason in the world we should not see exactly what resources that we have so we can be independent of countries like Venezuela, who Nikki Haley just slammed publicly for. They don't even have elections, and we're dependent on a country like that for our resources. So absolutely, we've got to explore. It can work in tandem with tourism in our state. We can go far enough off the coast, and incidentally, off from what I understand, the research I've done, we have natural gas resources, which is not oil, very different. And, you know, folks like to sort of slam this idea of we don't need to be, you know, if we have an oil spill. Well, if you have a gas spill, guess what? There's no problem because it dissipates. So I think we need to explore, see what we have. I disagree with those who would say we don't need to look into that.
Speaking of Dan, talking to Dan Hamilton, he is the congressional candidate in the District 4 race. Okay, I've asked a lot of questions. I want to let you sell yourself. Congratulations, you're elected to Congress. The furniture's all moved in. It's your first day. If it were my first day in Congress, I would do the thing. I would start the thing right away I was most passionate about. What would that be for you?
Yes. Yeah, so furniture's in. And assuming I had not hired staff yet, I would go to Senator Jim DeMint, who is a person I worked for right out of college. He has actually got an organization in D.C. that is helping members of Congress hire staff. And what we found is, you know, you hire staff, and if they're not in line with your values in terms of where we need to go, they will undermine you. So we would have Senator DeMint help us hire our staff. And then I've got four priorities legislatively that I'd work on. So when I go and I hire people, they have a 100-day plan, and there's accountability built into that. And I think we need accountability with our elected officials. So I would publicly have this accountability. I'm going to focus on four things. Number one, spending. We're going to go find $100 billion worth of spending. That's 10% of the spending that goes on in Washington. We're going to find $100 billion, and we're going to introduce a bill to repeal that spending and bring it back. Number two, we're going to focus on bureaucracy. There's a bill called the RAINS Act, which would rein in the federal bureaucracy. That's the number one problem we see as we try to grow businesses and do different things. You know, Dodd-Frank, a lot of the bureaucracy and the regulations that came out of that are crushing small and local banks like the one that I served on the board. And then number three, welfare reform. We're going to make sure that folks, if they want to have benefits from the government, they are seeking a job. They're getting education to get a job. But what I found is 6 out of 10 people are not even looking for work that are eligible. So our workforce is a huge problem. We need to get folks back to work and not living off the government. So that's priority number three. And then number four, the biggest driver of our national debt is entitlements. And it's we talked about the $1.3 trillion in spending that was just passed in the omnibus bill. That does not even include the mandatory spending that's going on right now to keep Social Security and Medicare going. And we've got to address those. So we got to keep our promises, but yet reform those for the next generation. If we don't do that, our country is bankrupt. In fact, 12 years from now, Social Security will be bankrupt unless we address it. So we've got to send people to Washington that have the courage to address those big issues. So those are my first four priorities. And with 180 days, you will see action from me on each one of those.
Talking to Dan Hamilton, he is a candidate for Congress in the district for a race. Dan, we're now $20 trillion in debt. You just talked about debt and cutting some spending. $100 billion is good, but that's just a drop in the bucket. The only way that, you know, we have gotten $20 trillion in debt, I mean, that's the size of the entire U.S. annual economy. We couldn't possibly pay it back, is one budget vote at a time. And these budget votes add, you know, an extra $1 trillion every time, sometimes more than that, in debt. And will you commit to not voting for a budget if it has debt, if it has borrowing? Because that's the only way we're going to stop this, is if Congress members stop voting for these budgets. Would you commit to that?
Yes, and I'd also commit to not voting for a budget unless it is gone through the correct process. You know, this $1.3 trillion omnibus spending mm-hmm. bill was put together by four people in the back room, and that's McConnell, Pelosi, Paul Ryan, and Chuck Schumer. And those guys do not need to be writing the budget. It needs to go through the regular order, the regular process, just like we do at the state level, and just like we have to balance our budget at the state, just like I have to balance the budget in my office, in my business. If we don't have the revenue to make the expenses, we cut our expenses. That's what every household does, and we will do that, and I will commit to not voting for a budget that does that in Washington.
Talking to Dan Hamilton, candidate for District 4 Congress, will you be joining the Freedom Caucus if they invite you?
My plan at this point, Tara, is to not join any caucus. I believe that we need to go up there and be completely independent of any caucus. I understand that the Freedom Caucus requires that they basically have your vote, and so that they get together and they agree on where you're going to vote. I think I need to be accountable and answerable to the people of the 4th District, not any caucus in Washington, whether or not it's a good caucus. I mean, I think the Freedom Caucus is doing the right thing in terms of their priorities, but I want to be answerable to the people in the 4th District, not to anyone in Washington.
Dan Hamilton, as you know, Paul Ryan is retiring. Among the two of the people that are talked about as replacements are Kevin McCarthy and Steve Scalise, who've been in lockstep with Ryan on virtually everything. Would you vote for Kevin McCarthy or Steve Scalise for House Speaker?
I don't know yet, Tara, who I'm going to vote for. What I'm going to do is we got to get through a 12-person primary. And then probably a runoff, and then a general election. So when I get to Washington, I will sit down and I will look each one of the folks that run for speaker or run for any leadership position, look them in the eye, find out exactly what their priorities are and what they're going to do to help move our country in the right direction. And so I can't commit to voting for anyone at this point until I get there and we see exactly who's on the table, who's out, you know, at the table, and who's going to do the right thing for the country.
Dan Hamilton, how can people find out more about you?
Tara, the best way right now, most people can pull out a phone and go to votedanhamilton.com, or they can pull up a desktop computer. But votedanhamilton.com is probably the best way, the easiest way to find out a little bit about my background, about my four priorities, about how I will be able to hit the ground running. Tara, we just don't have time in this country to mess around with small issues. We've got to have someone up in Washington who is going to work on the big issues, who has a record in business and in the legislature of being able to do those. And so if they go to votedanhamilton.com, they can find out more about me, and we'd love to have their vote and their support in the June 12th primary.
All right, Dan Hamilton, thank you so much for stopping by today. This is the toughest interview in the state, and you have done it. Many others won't do it. And so I always admire anyone who's willing to sit in the hot seat and answer the tough questions. Thank you for coming.
Thanks, Tara. You're awesome.
Thanks.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.